quiz tomorrow. Right, every other day, just whatever I get done today. Alright, that'll be a plus yesterday. Alright. Kinematics in 1D, we derived a couple of equations. We've stated the equations for motion in one dimension. We are looking at constant acceleration. If you have motion that's horizontal, then these four equations will apply. So horizontal motion corresponds to obviously having something like a ball that's moving, hopefully at a constant acceleration. This is not necessarily accelerating, so it's slowing down a little bit because of the motion. We can also have motion vertical, right? I can throw the ball up in the air, right? It goes up, it slows down, then it begins to speed up as it's coming down, having more and more of a negative velocity. Down is negative, up is positive. For vertical motion, that's called free fall. It's the same set of equations with a couple minor changes. Those minor changes are the acceleration, first off, is minus g. What's g? G is 9.8 meters per second squared. It's the acceleration due to gravity. That's a number which I will not give you. All right, you will know that fairly quickly. We're going to use it quite often, so you need to know that. You also replace all the x's up here with y's, and this is what the set of equations look like, okay, for free fall. But if you know these, and you just know this replacement, then that's enough to be able to do these types of problems in free fall. In doing any of these problems, you read the problem, try to figure out what the physics is that's going on. Sketch a picture. It helps a lot to draw pictures. No matter how crude they are. Label your axes. All right, if it's horizontal motion, you have an x-axis. Vertical motion, you have a y-axis. Label the knowns, what you don't know. Identify the relationships. Basically, figure out what equations you need. Figure out what physics there is. Later will be more physics than just this. But in this particular case, you identify which equation. All right, we have five unknowns in our kinematic equations. The equations that we have up there relate four of them. So if you know three, you can get the fourth. Solve for your unknowns. Then, does your answer make sense? Okay, think about it. Does it make sense? Do you have the right units? Do you have the right number of sig figs? So you want to check your answer for all those different types of things. So that's the basic procedure. So you need to sketch it, think about it. A lot of these problems are somewhat real-life type problems. You should be able to picture what's going on, all right, but also draw it so that you can identify. Sometimes the drawing helps the process of figuring out what's going on. All right, one more thing that I want to talk about before we go into Chapter 3, and that's graphical analysis. Many of us got a chance to look at some graphical analysis yesterday in the lab. What we did was we had somebody walk at a constant pace, constant velocity, or run, and we were able to locate their position at different times and find out what they were doing. So we could, for example, follow that person. If the person at at a fraction of a second, at the 1 meter mark, then at the 2 meter mark a little later, and the 3 meter mark, right, they're going forward. And we found out that this type of motion led to roughly a linear relationship between x and t. All right, we found this was true if the velocity were constant. When I came over here, If the velocity is constant, then the initial velocity and the final velocity are the same, so the average velocity is just equal to whatever the initial is. So then I would have x is proportional to t. We did not set our origin equal to 0 like we do in our problems, right? At t equals 0, we were not at x equals 0 necessarily. Okay, so in general, that's the case. But we set it up in our problems that way so we don't have an extra term. So there's position versus time. If I look at a particular time, let's say at 1 second, and then later at 4 seconds, we could find at 1 second we were at, say, 1.5. At 4 seconds, we're at the 5-meter mark. And by drawing a little triangle, we find out that our displacement, I want to go from 1.5 meters to 5 meters, what would the displacement be? How far have we gone?
3.5 meters.
And how much time? How much time has elapsed? 4 minus 1 is 3. Okay. If I look at the slope of that line, right, the slope of the line, we learned in some math class, was rise over run. So the slope is delta x over delta t. What's delta x? 3.5 divided by the time was 3 seconds. What's 3 over 3.5? 3.5 should be a little less than 1.2. What is it? 1.17, but the 2.66 is 1.2, so I could actually do that fairly quickly. What are the units? All right, we have 3.5 meters divided by 3 seconds is meters per second. And that's what our slope is. Delta x over delta t is what? Displacement over elapsed time. Displacement over elapsed time is what kind of velocity?
Average.
So the slope of that line is the average velocity. That's somebody that is actually walking at a constant pace in one direction, right? Notice as time increases, the person yesterday was going forward. Except for that one case that I had them go the other direction, right? Which some people thought they did their graphs wrong. But what happens if first we're going this direction as time increases? How does this graph change?
Negative.
The line was negative. We found that out in the lab. Okay. Well, we can do all sorts of other types of experiments. Right, it doesn't have to be horizontal. Like I said, I could take a ball, throw it up in the air, and have it drop. And we could record its height as a function of time, right? Basically, its vertical position as a function of time. What would that graph look like? Let's see. I'll string a ball. So as time goes on, and we have time in seconds, and let's say y instead of x. All right, let's say the ball's at this point. Let's pick this point to be y equals 0. Okay. But what t equals 0 and y equals 0, the ball starts down here. And then it goes up and does what? Reaches some maximum height at a particular time. Let's say it gets up here. And then later, it makes it back down. Of course, I catch it and stop it in its motion, but say maybe up that far, comes back down. So it comes up and down. The question is, if I were plotting y as a function of time, what would that look like? All right, y is a function of time for throwing the ball up in the air and having it come down. If we come over here, we see y as a function of time looks like what in general? If I put in, well, if I actually, in our problem, v0 is 0, so I could just have y proportional to t squared. So, oh, actually, v0 is not 0, I lied. I'm supposed to say, no, it isn't. Why isn't it 0? Because I threw it, right? I didn't drop it. All right, so anyway, so this is a parabola as a function of t. So what the parabola looks like, sort of like the coefficient in front of the t squared is negative, which means that it's a parabola that opens down. All right, we learned that in our algebra class. If I didn't catch the ball, it would continue, right, in time to go to negative y values. It would go below from where I point from where I released it. All right, there's an example. That's not a straight line relationship between the position and the time. What I could do, though, is I could say, let me make an observation at a particular time here, and let me make an observation at another time, say right there, and let me compute the average velocity. How do I compute the average velocity? Well, what is the average velocity? It's delta x over delta t. So we could do the same kind of thing that we did there, except in our case, it's actually delta y, because y is my variable, position variable. So what I could do is do the following. I could draw a triangle just like I did back here. All right, here I had a point, there I had a point. Draw a little triangle. The vertical is delta y. The horizontal is, I think the horizontal is delta t. And the slope is going to be the rise, which is delta y over the slope, I mean over the elapsed time, to run delta t. So I can get this slope, delta y over delta t, which this is the change in vertical position, right, which is the displacement in the vertical direction divided by the time. So that's going to, again, give me the average velocity. So we could write this as the average velocity that this ball has between those two points.
Well, wouldn't you want to find, like, more of the derivative?
We don't know what a derivative is.
But wouldn't that, I mean, just in general, wouldn't that be more accurate than drawing a line across the whole?
Well, it depends what you mean by accurate. If I note where this is at a particular time, and I note later where it is at a particular time, I can talk about the average velocity over this time period from right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, from say 1 to 5 seconds. That's what my average is over a long range. Okay? Now, what you're after is you're saying, but I really want to know how fast is it going at this instant. That's the instantaneous velocity, okay, which is what I'm going to do right now. Okay? So, everybody following? Okay. If I watch the ball, and the ball is at, say, a particular, you know, I throw it up like that, right? When it gets to this point, I know what its height is at a particular time. It goes up, comes down to a little bit lower, and as it's going from this point up and then to that, I can say what the average velocity is. But maybe I want to know what the average velocity is, you know, when I throw it up from this point to that point. All right? It would be a different average. OK? because at that point, it's always going up. Whereas for the problem that I did here, part of the time it's going up, part of the time it's going down. Part of the time the velocity is positive, part of the time the velocity is negative. Okay? So it's just like our trip to Raleigh, what I talked about the other day. All right? We start off, we hit I-40, we want to know what is our average velocity as we're going from Raleigh. Okay, assuming we're going in a straight line, because we have to be a little more careful because of the fact we're not actually going in a straight line on I-40. But if I were going in a straight line, I could figure out what the average velocity is in that one-dimensional situation. If I knew, okay, basically what? The initial and final position and how long it took. But that's not what was on my speedometer. Okay, and that's what he's bringing up. He wants to know what was on the speedometer at a particular time, for example, here. So how do I figure that out? Remember I said something about your speedometer measures over a very small period of time and a small distance to give you a value. And ideally, the instantaneous velocity is the velocity at an instant in which we do not go anywhere in time or anywhere in space somehow and get a value for what that instantaneous value would be. Okay, if I put a little speedometer on the ball somehow to measure how fast it was going at any instant. Of course, we could do that. We're going to do that in the lab, actually, but instead of attaching something to the ball, we're going to put a probe. Similar to what police would do use to determine how fast you're going, right? They're not going to sit in your car and read your speedometer, right? They're going to hit you with some radar. So let's see, what do we do? Instead of going all the way up to 5 seconds, what I could do is go and try to figure out what this looks like for a fewer number of seconds. Okay. So let me say I want to know what the instantaneous velocity is at 1 second. So instead of going all the way up to 5, I go up to this value. Okay? Connect those two, get the slope of that line segment. Obviously these two are different, aren't they? The average velocity now between these two times is different. And then I say, oh, well, that's still too much. That's about 2 seconds the last time. So let me make smaller time, right? So now I do 1 second. And we'll do a half a second. I come up a half a second. We only got this. Notice we only got that far. Take the slope between those two lines. So between these two times, this point and about a half a second, the slope of that segment gives me the average velocity. But a half a second is not an instant, is it? I can get smaller than a half a second. So let's go to a tenth of a second. Here's about a tenth. Come up here and get the slope of that segment. Notice that these slopes are beginning to look more and more alike, aren't they? In fact, they're pretty much alike. They're probably good to one or two decimal places. Okay, on my graph, I may want better. So we keep getting smaller and smaller, and we let delta t go to zero. Delta t being the time increment between the two times. Let that go to zero, and sooner or later, what will happen is I am going to approach that tangent line. The tangent line is a line that touches this curve just at one point, the point of interest. The slope of that line will give me the instantaneous velocity. Now, some of you have had calculus, all right? So you could write this down in terms of something called a derivative. We're not supposed to know any calculus. Okay, but for those who do know calculus, and this is where the derivative comes in, okay? The derivative of that particular thing. The derivative, for those of you that don't know what it is a generalization of what the slope is. All right, we know how to do slopes for straight lines, but for curves, how do I tell, at any point, how this is inclined? Over here it's like that, down there it's a negative increment. Okay, so that's where the instantaneous velocity comes in. So we can do all sorts of graphs and indicators. What about at the top? If I were to draw a tangent line here, what would it look like? It would be horizontal. What is the slope of a horizontal line? Zero. So the instantaneous velocity at the very top right before it starts coming back down, in other words, right? I throw it up, like we saw the other day, I throw the ball up, somewhere up here, for an instant, practically zero time, it stops. Okay? Is it still accelerating? I throw this ball up straight, and it gets up to the top, is it accelerating?
No.
Yes. Because an instant later, the velocity changes, doesn't it? At one instant, it's zero, but at another instant, it has a non-zero velocity. So just because the velocity is zero doesn't mean the acceleration is zero. In fact, what is the acceleration at all times on this path, assuming there's no air resistance? 9.8 meters per second squared, right? Negative. All right. So the acceleration due to gravity. As long as I'm near the surface of the Earth. Now we're going to drive that 9.8 probably, probably later this week, or at least by the beginning of next week. We'll drive that in chapter 4. Okay, so we can do this analysis. We could also look at a graphical analysis of velocity versus time and see what's going on. What I'm going to do now is actually bring up an applet, which will again demonstrate our graphical analysis again for some common situations. Okay, so we need for this to warm up. Instead of having a person like we had in the lab, we're going to have a cow. Okay, so let's see if this works. Play a little bit with some of the lights. Okay, so here's a cow. What we can do in here is put in some initial position, initial velocity, some acceleration. You're going to see a plot here of position versus time and velocity versus time. So, of course, now I have initial position is zero, the initial velocity is zero, the initial acceleration is zero, so what's the cow doing? Just sitting there, right? There's no motion. So I've got to give it some motion. Let's give it a little motion. Initial velocity, what's that sound of velocity? Where's my backspace? Okay, initial velocity, let's try 5. I'm going to hit run. And you will see that there it's taken off. It's just like Senyo yesterday when he was running there, right? What are you going? 6 meters per second or something. All right? So, same idea. Here's the grass. This is the type of graph we did yesterday. That's the first graph we have over here, right? Constant velocity, we expect a straight line whose slope is equal to that constant velocity. What does the second graph indicate? That's velocity versus time. There's no acceleration. This is horizontal. Constant velocity, right? How do you figure out acceleration? Change in velocity per elapsed time. If you have a constant velocity, what's the change in velocity?
Zero.
So this has zero slope. Notice it has, this is velocity, so the initial velocity is 5. That's what I put in here. It's always 5. So we can just go through. We can put in some other values here. We can put in 4 and see what happens. Okay, nothing exciting, right? You'll notice this kind of adjusts to its own scale. You really have to look over here. This is 60 meters, say, by 15 seconds. And the rise is 60. The run is 15. 60 over 15 is 4. Right? So we get our usual 4. Right? So even though the axes are fixed, you'll notice the scale do change. It's hard for people too far away to see that where you're sitting. All right, let's give it some acceleration. change the acceleration, backspace, give an acceleration of 1. See what it does. Notice the arrow here is indicating the velocity. All right, what's happening with this acceleration? It's moving faster and faster. We will see that we indeed do get a parabola, as we saw before, right? Position versus time. Notice that the velocity versus time graph is now no longer horizontal. It's still a straight line. Straight line because what is the slope of the velocity curve? Acceleration. Right? Because what we do is put the rise, change in velocity over the elapsed time, change in velocity over elapsed time, the acceleration. So the slope of this is the acceleration. If I increase the acceleration a little bit, hit run. Right? Well, it's hard to tell if the slope has changed, but that's. Right. So the path begins to change a bit. So you can see here. Okay, kind of hard to read it. You can see that that's a run of 60, right? That's 6 seconds that has elapsed. But this distance here, I'd have to look at a little closer to read across to see exactly what the change in velocity is. All right, how would this picture change if I change the acceleration to, say, minus 1? Say what? The slope on the curve would be opposite which curve? This one? Do you think the curve would look like this? One, I'm just asking what you think. Anybody else have some thoughts? Just flip what?
Top part on the right would be on the left. And then come down.
This one?
Yeah, that way.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
The highest point will come down.
So you think it's going to come down
like
this?
Exactly.
All right, so we have some feelings for what might go on, whether they're correct or not. Let's see what happens. Okay. Let's hit run. So this cow is going to start with an initial velocity of plus 4, and it's going to have a minus 1. What does minus 1 acceleration mean? Slowing down. So here it goes. Is he slowing down? I don't want you to slow down, I want the other way. Okay, so we come along. This is just like throwing a ball up in the air. Except instead of throwing a ball up in the air, we've thrown a cow this way. So we go. Okay, the cow goes off this way, but something is holding it back. Maybe, you know, maybe there's a strong wind or something that's pushing up there. It's kind of hard to imagine if it wasn't strong enough, but I don't know. I guess if we've seen twisters, we could believe anything. Right? So, that's what we get. Notice that this has a negative slope indicating negative acceleration. Okay? And then this is what happens when I have a negative acceleration with it starting off that direction, and now it's going the opposite direction. Notice this is the same as we did with the free fall. The acceleration is minus 1 at all times. Right? All right, so those are our all the things we need to begin to think about with kinematics in one dimension. We can either think about kinematics that's horizontal, objects moving in that direction, or vertical, objects moving this direction. At constant acceleration, again, if you have non-constant acceleration, it's a little more difficult. The other thing is, now I lost my train of thought. Okay. So where are we going to go after that? Let's see. We're going to go to kinematics in two dimensions. This is chapter 3. We'd like to be able to describe motion in two dimensions, which is easy to do. motion at two dimensions, if I toss this ball through the air, all right, that ball is going horizontal, but it's also going up and down. So I need two dimensions to describe that kind of motion. Specifically in 2D, we'll think about the motion in a plane. It doesn't matter, right, where I throw the ball. If I throw the ball like that, you can see the plane, right? But I could toss the ball out for the audience, and hopefully it's going to follow a path that lies in a plane. So this is not too restrictive. If you want, we can go to three dimensions. Okay, but we don't really don't have too much need to go to a three-dimensional type motion at this time.
Okay.
Up and down is our usual Y. Left and right is X. So these are going to be different types of plots. Over here, this was position versus time. This is just spatial coordinates. So I can identify an object like my ball by stating what its coordinates are. So that ball has coordinates X and Y. That's not the only way we identify things. We can also identify the position of the object with respect to some given origin by drawing a vector. Now this will identify my position. In fact, we can just go back and define everything like we did in the beginning of chapter 2, but describe it in 2D instead of 1D. We're not going to use X for position. What we're going to use for position, which is more standard, is R. So my position vector will be designated with an R. It's like, how far am I from the origin? If you remember drawing circles, right? The circle R was a constant, right? The radius, okay? So somehow R got into this as how people describe position vector. So there's the location of my ball at some instant as it was going through some path. Let's say my ball follows this path. So that initially I saw the ball in the location that's indicated here. Well, since that's my initial position, I'll put a subscript, sub zero. And later I will see the ball over here and I will have a final position. So, of course, we can identify the final position with a vector. We'll call that final position R with no subscript. Right, so our positions are given by R's. The initial one has a subscript. After we define position, what did we define in chapter 2? It's a natural thing after position. About displacement. And the next thing I need is displacement. I want to know what my displacement is from this point to that point. What is the displacement? Well, let's see. It's going to be the change in position. How do I get a change in position? I take the final position and subtract the initial position. Again, delta is always going to be final minus initial. So the final position minus initial position. So that's what my displacement is. How would I represent that on this picture? Would be the question. So R minus R is zero. I have to rewrite this a little bit. If I add R zero to both sides, I could see that my final position is just going to be the initial position plus the change. Right, bring the R0 over. Right, I get initial plus the change is going to give me an idea where the final is. R0 that vector. R is this vector, but if I think about this in terms of vectors, this is telling me that my displacement is a vector that if I add it to R0, it'll give me R. Alright, so R0 plus delta R will leave me at R. But if I think about this in terms of vectors, how do I add vectors? I just add vectors head to tail. Head to tail, right? So can I think of a vector that if I connected it to R0 would end me up here at this point? Going from there to here, is that what you're thinking? If I went and drew a vector here, is it true that R0 plus the vector I just drew is, has a sum that's equal to R? Right? Geometrically, right? That's how we define adding vectors. Adding the R0 vector plus this vector is that sum. That's the displacement. The displacement, if I were to graphically represent it, is just a vector that takes me from the initial position to the final position. This is nice because the displacement is something that we'll all agree upon. I can walk around with my own coordinate system, you can walk around with your coordinate system, and we would all get the same vector. We may have different position vectors from our different origins, but in the end, the displacement is going to be the same, which is nice. Alright, there's a displacement. Okay, elapsed time, that doesn't change, right? That was the next thing. So what do I do once I say something about the ball goes from here to here, I can do the displacement. Now I can say, oh, this ball could go from this point to that point in 2 seconds, in half a second, in an hour. So what would be the next thing I would like to be able to describe? Velocity. So let's do the average velocity. Okay, well, we know what average velocity is. What is average velocity? Average velocities. Well, these are vectors. Remember in the other chapter I said, you can't write bold space? So we put arrows over it. In this chapter, we have to use vectors. Now we have a bold face, right? We have a vector. I have to put an average. How do I make this an average? Put a bar over it. All right, so it's a little bit ugly. But I have my velocity, put the bar to be average. This is going to be what?
Delta x.
Well, it's going to be the displacement over the elapsed time. In our case, right, one dimension is delta x, and more dimensions is delta r. So that's what the velocity looks like. The velocity is a vector. Okay. All right, where would the average velocity appear on my picture? If I were to write down, what's the average velocity between these 2 points? We have to think about this. All right, delta R, we can see. Divided by the elapsed time. Elapsed time could be 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, half a second, right? But it's a positive number. What happens when I say 1 over a positive, well, that's still a positive number. So all I have to do is multiply delta R by some number, and that'll represent V. It really depends on the time scale for doing this. But if I multiply delta R by a positive number, and look at that vector. That vector is just a vector pointing in the same direction as delta r, isn't it? My problem is I don't know what my time scale is. I don't know if this vector is going to be smaller than delta r or bigger, but I at least know that the velocity, the average velocity, points along this same line. So I can represent the average velocity. If delta t gets smaller, then I didn't get quite as far, right? So if I were interested in the instantaneous velocity at this point, then I would look at the ball's position a little bit closer. right? Delta T goes to zero. That's what we were doing back here. So if I have delta T goes to zero, my ball's there. Now there's my average velocity. I get delta T a little bit more. There's my average velocity. Until finally, if delta T goes to zero, my instantaneous velocity turns out to be along the tangent to this curve. And so we can define instantaneous velocity. And the instantaneous velocity will always be the tangent to the curve. Now, I'll bring that point up again as we need it. Okay, right now, we don't necessarily need it. The velocity is a vector. Vectors have components. We can write down the x and the y components. So my average velocity, well, my actually the instantaneous velocity I was just talking about, we'll stick with that, can be written in component form. Just like r0 has an x coordinate and a y coordinate for position, the velocity has different components. And so we're going to write down x components and y components of velocity to represent the vector. In chapter 1, we saw we could write a vector and talk about its magnitude and direction, or we could just write down and talk about its components. Okay. The magnitude of E is equal to the speed at that instant. Right? So if I kick a ball, and initially it's going at 25 meters per second, okay, that's the magnitude of the velocity vector at that instant. And so sometimes you will see the speed given, right, as well as an angle. You're basically given the magnitude and the direction of a particular velocity. After we did velocity, what did we do? Acceleration. So we have the average acceleration. What's the average acceleration?
The average velocity.
Average acceleration. The acceleration is a vector. There's the average. Would be what? What did I write an equation?
That's a
b. Delta b divided by delta t, the change in velocity for change in time. We're going to look more and more later at what this means. But right now, that's the definition. I can let delta t go to zero. We can get instantaneous acceleration. But paralleling what we did in chapter 2, we are going to look at only problems where the acceleration is constant. Okay? We're going to consider now that A equals a constant. The acceleration has components. So the acceleration vector is a vector pointing in some direction. It has components. It has an x and a y component, so we can introduce x and y. The x component of acceleration means something is accelerating horizontally. The y component means it's accelerating vertically. Okay. The problems that we're going to be mostly concerned with in this chapter are problems in which we are going to study projectile motion. That's our main application right now. The projectile motion is the motion of projectiles. Well, that doesn't tell you much, right? Basically, we're going to look at bodies that, if we fling them near the surface, of the Earth, right? Throw something, throw a ball, shoot a rocket, right? Hit a golf ball, etc. Then it will be governed basically by one acceleration, and that's the acceleration due to gravity. If I throw this ball over like that and miss it, okay, then What is this doing? It's coming across. Let's assume, as usual, that there's no wind or anything slowing it down horizontally. The only thing that's causing this to change its acceleration is what? Right. The acceleration is in this direction, right? Just like when I throw it up and down, okay? It's the acceleration to the gravity. Gravity is always pulling it downward. Nothing is causing it to slow down in this direction. So there is no horizontal acceleration, but there is vertical acceleration. That's what we're going to have for projectile motion. We're going to have ax is 0 and a sub y is minus g, and we would like to study those types of problems. How do we study those kinds of problems? Well, we need some equations, right? We need something to talk about the motion. What's nice about two-dimensional motion is I can separate the horizontal and the vertical motion. So the horizontal and vertical motions are separate. Well, there is a slight connection. There's the time. Both things are happening at the same time. There's a time connection between these, but for the most part, whatever's happening in this direction is independent of what's happening in that direction. And we're going to make that useful to come up with equations for projectile motion. The place we begin is very simple. If those motions are independent, we already know something about motion in this direction, don't we? That's the first set of equations, the kinematic equations. We know something about the up and down motion. That's free fall. So for projectile motion, we essentially have constant motion, constant velocity in this direction, free fall in the up and down direction. So that's what we want to do. So we come over here, and we can make some adjustments to our equations. Where's my eraser? Look at horizontal motion. The horizontal motion is governed by our first four equations of kinematics. V is equal to V0 plus AC, all in the horizontal direction. But there's problems here. First off, what is V? This is the velocity in the horizontal direction, right? The final velocity. This is the initial velocity in the horizontal direction. This equation by itself, okay, is not very useful. It can get confusing once I throw in these equations. Since I want this to be in the horizontal direction, what I really mean is I need to look at the components of the velocity in the horizontal direction. What is the component of velocity in the horizontal direction? What's another way of saying that? I just mean the name. If I come over here, I've got basically, here's my velocity. What would be the component in the horizontal direction? V sub x. Okay? So I have to adjust this set of equations to make this applicable to horizontal motion. So my V's now, I need to put a subscript on these to indicate that I'm considering the x components of the velocity. The acceleration also has components, so I need the x component. So we just take the four equations that we're supposed to know by now, we hopefully know them by tomorrow, right? And make some adjustments. Second equation, what do I have? I have x is equal to 1 half v0x plus v sub x times c. So the velocities and the acceleration need some subscripts. We have multiple subscripts now. V piece of x squared is v 0 x squared plus 2a sub x times x. So all my v's and a's get subscripts. Last one, x equals v 0 x t plus 1 half a x t squared. So for general two-dimensional motion, in which I can have acceleration in the x direction, these are the structure of the equations. But for projectile motion, what did I say we have for projectile motion? Ax is 0. So if Ax is 0, what happens to all my equations here? Get rid of all my A's, right? So Ax is 0. Come up, the first equation. Second term is 0. What does that tell you? That Bx is B0x. What is that? How would I interpret this? Final velocity is equal to the initial velocity, the x component of the final velocity, right? Tells me that if, no matter what my velocity is on the path, when I'm tossing this ball through the air, no matter what the velocity is, the x component of the velocity does not change. It always goes forward with the same velocity, that the horizontal velocity that it had to start with. So if I toss this through the air, right, its velocity does change, but the x component is the same. In fact, if I walk under the ball at the same speed, okay, that the ball is going forward, I would see essentially this, right, in my reference frame. If I were going with the ball across like this, I have to try to keep up with it. The idea is that what I see is as if I were standing still, right? Just free fall. Providing I was moving at that time. So it goes forward, always. So that's a nice thing to know. Let's see, what else? Well, if Vx is equal to V0x, this equation tells me that V0x plus V0x times a half, and then multiply times t gives me x. So what does this give me? See, x. What's v0x plus v0x? 2v0x. Multiply by a half. And just us with 1v0 sub x times t. So that tells me that I can tell you how far forward the ball has gone if I know the time and its initial velocity, horizontal velocity. Okay? Down here, all right, a sub x is 0. This tells me vx squared is v0x squared. Well, you can get that from the first thing. That doesn't tell me anything new. And let's see, that term goes out. This tells me x is v. Oh, that doesn't tell me anything new either. So the only thing I can conclude are these results. And that's very useful. And it will be useful when we do projectile motions. That's the horizontal motion for a projectile. What about the vertical motion? What did we say the vertical motion was for projectile motion? It's just basically free fall, as I just indicated. It's basically free fall. All I need are the free fall equations for these. Let me write these down. What do I have? V is V0 minus GT. How would I have to change this and adapt it for two-dimensional motion? These things are in the y direction, so I need a subscript of a y. V sub y, V0 sub y. Go to the next equation. Y is equal to 1 half v0y plus v sub y t. Third equation, was b squared is b0 squared minus 2gy. That was the free fall equation that we had the other day. Subscripts on the b's. Notice I don't have to change the acceleration. All we know is for free fall, the acceleration is negative g. Right? But that's already built in the free fall. One more. Y equals b0yt minus 1/2 g t squared. Well, guess what? Vertical motion cannot be simplified in general much better than this. Right. In some particular examples, if b0y is 0, then that equation would simplify things like that. Right. So in applications, we can get some simplification. But this is the best we can do. The vertical motion, we have the free fall equations. The horizontal motion, we essentially have this one equation. X is equal to b0xt. And we know that the horizontal component of velocity does not change along the path. Let me sketch this, and then we'll do some examples. Again, the sketches we're doing now are in space. It's not like the ones I did earlier with the graphical analysis. It's not position versus time, but it's, right, we have our y-axis and our x-axis. In typical problems, what we are going to have is a projectile like my proverbial ball here, right? We're going to toss it in the air, kick it, throw it, okay? We can throw a basketball, whatever, and it doesn't, right, wherever it is, we set that to be the origin. So here's my ball. We will initially assume that the ball starts at x equals 0 and y equals 0. There's my y-axis. There's the x-axis. And as the ball travels, or whatever the projectile is travels, it's going to travel from here. It could be thrown down. Okay, it could be shot horizontally. I could take this ball and just let it roll off. Right? And as it comes off here, it undergoes, once it leaves the table, it undergoes projectile motion until it approaches an obstacle like a trash can or whatever, or ground, etc. So here's an object. It follows a parabolic path. Okay, one can actually find the relationship between x and y and write down the equation of that parabola. Okay, in space. But there is our path. At any particular point on the path, the ball has a velocity. The instantaneous velocity, I just shrunk my ball to a point. The instantaneous velocity on the path is always tangent to the path. Down here, there's the ball. Its velocity vector looks like that. As with any vector, these vectors have components. So let's see, how do I write the component, right? Draw a little right triangle. The horizontal component is what? The x component. So this is vx. The vertical component, dy. Notice that the vertical component will be positive in this case, indicating that it's headed upward. Then I come over here, later, it has these components. Here's a vx. There's vy. Notice it's pointing downward. That's because it's going downward now. The point of the first equation is that no matter where I am on the path, vx is constant. So whenever I draw this, this and that should be the same. No matter where I am on the path. Where is v0? Well, v0 is the initial velocity. Right? It is the velocity vector in this direction. And usually you're given v0, or you're supposed to find it. So if I come down, we have v0x. And this length here should be the same as that length, should be the same as this length for projectile motion. V0y is upward. Lots of times you are given instead the magnitude of the initial velocity and the angle, right, the launch angle, theta. In which case, then you need to write down V0x, V0y in terms of V0 and theta. Okay? So when you are given those types of things, it's helpful to write these down right away. So let me remind you, V0 sub x is what? The magnitude V0 times some trig function. What is it? And V0y is V0 times. So those are the x and the y components of the initial velocity, which in the more complicated situations, like if you were kicking a ball on the ground and you were sending it off at some angle, right, you would kick it with some speed at some angle to the ground. It would fly through the air, and you would ask questions like, how high did it get? How far did it go? Okay, et cetera. Those are the types of things that we can answer. All right, so what we're going to do is take a quick break for a few minutes, and we're going to come back and do some examples of projectile motion and see how to apply these equations. All right, are you ready? All right, I gave you the basic foundations for doing projectile motion. Basic foundations are, again, the relationship between the horizontal distance, the time, and the initial horizontal velocity. We know that the horizontal velocity is constant. And then the vertical motion is free fall. Okay? We need to put these together to be able to do projectile motion problems. There are a variety of projectile motion problems. One type is when something is shot horizontally. Right? Like examples where you have a gun and you shoot it and the bullet goes out horizontally. As soon as it leaves the muzzle, it undergoes projectile motion. So, for example, this ball can roll off the table. Right? It comes off the table horizontally, but as soon as it leaves the table, it follows a projectile path. It's as if, right, it is shot from this position and just goes shoom. Okay, down. Of course, you're going to get different motion if this is going faster. Right. Notice that it went further out as it undergoes its motion. So here's an example. I believe this is probably even a homework problem in which a car one morning was found down here, okay, someplace. This is not going to be the scale, but down here, and it was assumed that it came off the cliff at the top. So there's a road up there. It was driving. It was going a certain velocity, say V0, and it ended up undergoing projectile motion, and they found the crash at the bottom. And the question is, how fast was it going when it went off the cliff? Right? Because you give the guy a ticket or whatever, right? The cliff is 54 meters. The distance forward is 130 meters. Of course, you need to think these problems are made up, or maybe you see it on Matlock or things like that. Okay, but this problem is not made up. Okay, as you may have noticed, we're being taped. The person that's taping us back there has a wife who's works in forensics. We got a phone call about, I don't know, 6-8 years ago, from some police department that I guess she forwarded to me, and they said that there was some party at one night or something, and some guy was found in the bushes down here. Okay, they wanted to know whether this person had actually gotten pushed out or had run and jumped. Alright? And so we knew something about how far the balcony was from here, from the ground, and we knew how far the bushes were over here. And they wanted this answer in like a couple of seconds. Never heard back from them. But, you know, things like this do happen, right? I mean, some of these problems that we make up, you know, sometimes do have real life applications. Okay, we hate to have to worry about that application. But, so, it's the same idea. Okay? Find the car down here. Can we figure out how fast this car was moving? Right? Assuming it goes out straight, right, and just undergoes projectile motion. Of course, there could be a little air resistance on other things. We're ignoring those. Alright. So how do I do a problem like this? Let's write down what we need to know. Let's see. 130, what's that? X. Alright. This is going and displaced horizontally by X equals 130. When we start our problems off, as I said before, the origin of your XY coordinate system is always where the initial place is. So there's the origin, right? X equals 0, Y equals 0. This comes off, which means we have reached a Y value down here of what? Negative 54. All right, Y equals 0 there. Of course, this is my point card, right? So we have space really isn't there. So we have Y equals 0. We go down to Y equals negative 54. So I know Y. I know X. And I don't know V0. So let's see if we can tie some of these things together. In these projectile motion problems, if you're ever given this horizontal distance, there is, or need to find it, there's only one equation in the horizontal direction, and that's x is equal to v0xt. v0x is the x component of the initial velocity. Let's look at my initial velocity here. Right, this is my initial velocity. What can I say about the x component of the initial velocity? What is the angle? If I shoot something out horizontally, what is the angle that it makes with the x-axis? Zero. So we come over here. Cosine of zero? One. Okay, so the cosine of zero is one, so v0x is just v0. Right. Remember, horizontal vectors do not have y components, right? So the x component is the whole length of the vector. V0y, what did I just say? V0y is what? Zero. Right. Or you just take the sine of zero and get zero, right? You can compute it from here. But if I have a horizontal vector, it has no y component. So we ought to be able to, by now, just write that down and not have to compute it. But if we have to compute it, we're going to just plug in zero for the angle. Okay, so what does this tell me? What is x? 130. And then v0x is d0. T is t. We know the time? No. All right, the only thing this equation gives me is 130 is v0 times t. What am I looking for? I want to be zero. Well, if I knew t, I'd be done, wouldn't I? So I need t. If I know t, then I can come back up and finish the problem. Where do I get t from? Well, I haven't used the 54 meters, have I? So where do you get the other information? Well, I've got four equations over here. We now go to the vertical motion. The horizontal motion is simple. I just have to write down this x equation. The vertical motion, usually you have to look at what you're given and decide which of these equations is going to get you what you need. Okay? Okay, we need t. What do we know? Let's see. Y is minus 54 meters. We know that. Okay, so I need an equation with t and y. Is there anything else that I need? I know. Well, at y equals minus 54 meters, we know that, well, I'm going to end it up there. Anything else we know in the vertical direction?
G.
Okay. But g is a constant. All right, we know g. So not like we really have to worry about finding it. It's always going to be there in our minds, unless this problem took place on the moon, and then we would have to go and find the G, right? So, what else?
V0Y?
What is V0? V0Y. Do we know V0Y?
Zero.
It's zero. Okay, let's see. Maybe this is enough. I see four things here. I see one, two, three, four. Right? Our kinematic equations usually involve four quantities. I know three of them. So there must be an equation over there which relates to these four. Or basically, right, relates those three because we know three. Yes?
I'm just
going to
ask, what is dy
be
zero and not
dy? Would dy be zero? Would the final velocity in the y direction be zero? That's a good question. What do you think?
When you're taking the measurement.
Well, if I throw this over, that ball goes down, hits the ground, let's pretend it didn't bounce. Okay? The question is, when it finally settles, right? We're assuming this part is not bouncing too, I guess. Okay? What if that ground weren't there? What if I had another clip? Would that stop? No, we keep going. Why does it keep going down? Because V sub y is not zero. The only reason it's zero there is because something came in and changed the acceleration in the problem and stopped it. Okay? So just because it goes to hit the ground, we're talking about the velocity right before it hits the ground. Because once it hits the ground, that's a new problem. Okay? But that does come up in other problems, so it's a good question. Okay. The rest of you, if you weren't listening to me, probably were thinking about which equation to use, right? So which equation would we use?
The last one.
Y equals V0YT minus 1/2 V. What is Y? Negative 54. V0y. Zero. Zero.
Would that usually be the case? Or would you give us problems where that wasn't zero? I mean, that was really.
Well, there will be problems where this is not zero. To answer your question, there can be.
Well, I know, but can you focus on that? Or not really.
We'll do a problem in a couple minutes. 9.8. Squared. So at some point we will do some problems where V0Y is not zero. Which means we can do projectile motion with non-zero angle. Solve this for T squared. T squared is equal to, let's see, the minuses go out, 2 times 54 divided by 9.8. What do you get for T? Take the square root of
3.3.
So. Now when you're doing problems like this, take a couple of steps. You may want to go back and remind yourself what you're doing. What are we doing? We want to know what V0 is. You came over. We have 130 as V0T. I said I needed T. Why? Because if I knew T, I could get the answer. I got C. So now, I have 130 is V0 times 3.3. So V0 is what? 39.4. Well, let's just go with 39 meters per second. For 2 sixth figs. Right, I didn't indicate exactly how many sixth figs. So 39 meters per second. So was the car going very fast? Not really. What did we do the first day of class? I asked you if 40 meters per second was fast. The only reason I did that is because I knew I was going to do this problem. Right? So, 89 miles per hour or something like that, right? So this is close to 90 miles an hour. That's probably a little too fast to be going around that cliff, right? Okay, so what did we learn from this? We essentially have vertical motion and that's all the horizontal motion stuff that we need. Very often the last two equations come up in doing these problems out of four of these. Okay, just to let you know. Okay, let me do another problem. Oh, no, those, no. If it was a balcony, isn't 54 meters high. All right? No, I forget the numbers.
Was he pushed?
I thought that he was going a little too fast. I forget the exact numbers. Well, he didn't just stand there and jump. So either he took a running leap or somebody pushed him. Well, there was more to this story because this came up in an investigation where some woman had just lost their, I guess that was her husband or something, and there was some other case that was a few years earlier, and I don't know, there was some really strange going on that they were trying to prove that she had something to do with it. But I forget, it was a while ago. Let's do another example. Okay. There's all sorts of ways to get projectiles going. Let's assume that I have a golf ball. Right? We hit the golf ball. Let's hit this golf ball at an angle of 30 degrees into the air. Let's assume that that golf ball was hit at 25 meters per second. That's the speed that's going at the initial instant. What's the golf ball going to do? Fly through the air. And then we can ask all sorts of interesting questions. I mean, we can say, how high did it go? We can say, how far did it go? Typically, if you're interested in how far it went from here to the same height later, and that's called the range. I'm interested in that distance. I would be asking, what is the range? Doesn't seem like it gave very much information, does it? Okay. Well, once again, let's take a look at the equation. We have the horizontal motion equation, actually one of them, which I just erased, and we have the vertical motion equation. This is a harder problem than the one I did before because we have an angle that's not zero, a 30-degree angle. But in all these problems, what you want to do is take that initial velocity and break it up into its components because you know you're going to need the components at some point. Maybe before I get started, I'm going to write V0x, V0y, and compute what these are. V0x, again, is V0 times what? Cosine, in this case, of 30. What is V0? V0 is the magnitude of the initial velocity or the speed. That's the initial speed. 25 times the cosine of 30. What? 21.7 or 22, I guess in some way, writing 2.63. We'll just go with 2.63. V0y is V0 times the sine of 30. Sine of 30 is actually a half of a you should get 12.5 for the first 10 years per second. Okay. Now I have those handy so I can use them before I start writing down all my equations. I want to know what the range is. So again, x equals V0xt. Let's see. V0x is about 22 times t. So I'm stumped again. So again, we have one equation for the horizontal motion that we need to figure out right now, and that is given by x equals V0xt. But now what we know about it, I want to find x. Get that. Again, I need t. We need t, so we go to vertical motion. To get t. Alright, so let's think about this, right? Here's the initial position. I'm interested in what's happening when it hits the ground over here. So the time I'm interested in is the time it takes to go from the ground back to the ground. So x corresponding to that time. So what do I know? Let's see. Well, we know v0y, right? Do we know anything on this side? At time t, do we know the final velocity?
G.
We know g. Okay. That's good. The height is zero. Okay, so we do know that the height is the same, right? Because as before, we start with x equals 0, y equals 0 there. We end up with y equals 0 here. Of course, if I were throwing a basketball into a hoop, right, the hoop wouldn't necessarily be on the ground unless I were flying through the air or something, right? But you know, you throw the basketball up, then you would have there a non-zero height. That would be a little harder, but it's doable. We know v0y, we know y. We want to find t. Is there an equation that relates these?
How do we know y?
What?
Right.
This is the x-axis. So therefore, y is 0. Y equals 0 here, y equals 0 here. Okay? And what did you say?
The last one.
The last one? Well, there's some y's, right? If I put y in here as 0, then I can get time out of that. Okay. Well, y equals v0yt minus 1/2 g t squared. And there I can solve that equation. Right? We know y, we know v0y, we know g. That's a quadratic. So we can use the quadratic formula in general. Especially in the case where y is not 0. But when y is 0, it actually turns out it's easier to solve. But y equal to 0, what's v0y? 13. I came from stuff I wrote over here. See why it's nice to write these out now, get them over with, and then you know you have them when they're ready for you. G is 9.8. 1/2 g is 4.9. All right, there is an equation. We can obviously see there's only one unknown. How would I solve something like that? Besides the quadratic formula. Is there another way? We can factor out a t. Take a t out of both of these. I have a t times 13 minus 4.9t. I have the product of two things is equal to 0. If the product of two things is 0, one of them must be 0. So this tells me t equals 0, or 13 minus 4.9t is 0. I get two solutions. This tells me that there are two different times at which my ball will be on the ground. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. T equals zero is on the ground to begin with, but who cares about that? I already knew it. No, that's not the one I'm looking for. I want this one. Solve that for T. What do you get? T is what? 13 divided by 4.9? 2.7 seconds. Is that right? Why did I need this? So I can find X. So X was 22T. So that's 22 times 2.7. So since I only gave you the two sig figures, that's what we get. What do we end up with? 59. So this tells me the range is, I'm assuming that's right. If anybody thinks it's wrong, is that close enough? Now we know the range is. What if I wanted to know the height? How would I get the height? I could divide the time by a half. Or I could do the problem where I just want to know when the final velocity, vertical velocity, is zero. All right? So, what if I didn't know the range? What if I didn't do this problem and I just told you to find the maximum height? You could do that separately by knowing that V sub y is zero at the very top. All right? V y is zero at the top. What other types of things can we do? If I wanted to know how fast it was going here, okay, we can do that because we can go back to our equations I erased. Okay, and check that out. If I look at the third equation, it has something like vy squared is v0 y squared minus 2gy. What if I were interested in how fast, or what v0 v sub y were here? What is v sub y there? Y is 0. So V sub Y is V zero Y. Actually, right, take the square root, but that's not quite right. This Z Y is pointing up, that one's pointing down. So over here, it turns out that the Y component of the final velocity is the negative of the Y component of the initial velocity. Okay. In fact, it turns out the speed at this point is going to be 25 meters per second. You might want to convince yourself of that. So there are various things you can get out of these equations, right? My initial problem was just to find the range. I'm just giving you some indications of other questions that could come up. All right, so that's going to conclude our quick analysis of projectile motion. All right, and what I want to do is hand back to Bridges and say a few things.